Hi, thanks for listening to Bowties in Business. This is Tim Kubiak, and today's guest is Alex Sanfilippo. Alex is the host of Creating a Brand, a top 20 entrepreneurship podcast where he interviews successful leaders and experts on topics that matter to entrepreneurs and who want to grow their business both faster, both personally and professionally, while saving time and money in the process. This is a podcast about entrepreneurship and a lot of other things, so stay tuned in, because one of the things is his journey as a business owner really started at 12 when he saw the opportunity to sell golf balls that were lost in the lake across the street from his house to the golfers that were in the course hitting them in the lake. Early on, he figured out the one thing he was good at is business, which is a wonderful gift in life. Alex approaches business and life from a place of service and dedication to making others more successful. Visit creatingabrand.com to join the community and to accelerate your success. With that, you can also find him on his social. So Alex, if you introduce yourself, tell folks where they can find you and a little bit about your background.
For sure. Thanks so much for the introduction. I really appreciate it. Tim, everyone can find me at creatingabrand.com. That is my main website. You can find the podcast there. You can find the online community there and anything I'm involved in. That's kind of like my hub. Even my social links are on there and things like that, because I used to tell people to look up Alex Sanfilippo. And everyone's like, how on earth do you spell that? You know, so I think everyone can spell creatingabrand.com. So that's where I always tell everyone to go. And a little bit about me, I got into podcasting a couple of years ago, and that's why I'm here today. It's something that I enjoy. I really love adding value to people's lives. And we'll get into some of the story today, I'm sure. But I'm just excited to be here. And thank you so much for having me. This is a fantastic podcast. I'm really honored to be spending time with you today, Tim.
Well, frankly, I'm stunned that you came on as a guest. So I'm really excited, genuinely. So. With that, I talked about the golf ball story. So that's literally, you know, my joke is I started selling hard candy on the school bus to kids at a markup to pay for batteries for video games. You started with golf balls, but where did it go from there for you?
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that. I told one person that on a podcast one time, and then he told 15 of his friends, and it stuck ever since. So I've always had that story shared at some point, but it was one of those things that I realized at that moment. I actually wasn't good at video games growing up. I wasn't good at sports, wasn't a great musician or anything like that. Some of my brothers were really good. And I was like, I'm in an awkward place. I'm not good at any of these things everyone else is good at. But I realized when I started selling golf balls, I was actually good at business and I liked it. And it wasn't just the money I was making. It was actually the act of making money that I really enjoyed. So I kind of carried that into my teen years and into my early 20s, but it was very subconscious, I'd say. I can't consider it to be something that, you know, I wasn't making real like decisions on my life at that age. I just kind of like fell into more and more business related things that made sense for me. And so into my early teen years, I got involved in some tech startups in the real estate business, working with realtors and things like that, helping them do some of their work on the computer, because people weren't as, I guess, computer illiterate back then. You know, people were having some trouble with it. So I was able to help out. And into my early 20s, it served me getting into the aerospace industry as well.
And that's beautiful. And pretty much my view of you is you've always been an entrepreneur. You've always pretty much worked for yourself, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I've had jobs, of course, along the way, but yes, I've always at least had the entrepreneurial mind in everything that I've done.
And more and more people need that. That's one of the things I'm convinced that we're failing to teach younger people, right?
Yes. You're right.
You know, develop an app, do something, launch it. You know, I spent a lot of time in Silicon Valley, so it's fail fast, fail forward kind of mentality. Mm-hmm. But as long as you're learning from every little launch and not losing your shirt, I think you're better off.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm actually glad you mentioned that, because I think it's very important. I think that we're in a world today that people are afraid to fail, and it really shouldn't be that way. I think that younger kids in school, they should be taught to try something, even if it doesn't turn into the next $1 million idea or anything like that, even if it never really goes anywhere. The act of exercising this side of your brain that we all have is really healthy for you. It helps you think creatively and get outside of your own box. And I think that students there are fitting too much into that little mold. And this is probably not where we want to go today, but I'm passionate about that. So I had to share that. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, no. And I'm happy to go wherever the conversation takes us. That's the one thing, right? You go where's natural. So no worries. One of the challenges for business people is work-life balance. And I've heard you talk about this. So before we get in directly to things, that's one of the things you seem to have a pretty good grip on. How do you balance being an entrepreneur, running a business, you're creating a brand and everything else you're doing with having a life?
Yeah, it's a good question. First off, I haven't always had both. There were times in my life where I was working up to 70 hours a week. It wasn't always that, but sometimes I was working that much and it wasn't out of necessity. It was out of a a drive that didn't need to be there, an unhealthy drive, if you will. And I didn't leave time for anything else. I wasn't leaving time for friends. I was single at that point in my life, so I didn't have any relationships, like romantic relationships. My friendships were just kind of suffering, and I was just really focused on getting ahead, if you will. And it wasn't until later in life that I realized that I was really passing a lot of the meaningful parts of life by the way. I was just letting it go. Because really, life has more meaning than just the work that we do. And it's when we have that realization, I believe, that we start to create this balance. And some people say that balance is impossible. But for me, I do believe it's possible to have the right mindset at the very least in whatever you're doing. So there's actually something that Dr. Ivan Meisner says. He's the founder of BNI. And he says, be where your feet are. Be where your feet are. And what that means to me is just wherever I am in that moment, I need to actually be there. Something I've been realizing more and more, Tim, is that when people are really big, really engraved in their work, they're really onto something big they believe, and then they're hanging out with friends or family, you can look in their eyes and tell that they're not actually there with you. They might physically be there, but they're really not actually there. They're looking over you. They're looking past you. They're looking into their mind about, okay, how am I going to do this later on when I get back on the grind of what I'm doing? And I find that the real problem with balance is that we're not able to be where our feet are any longer. We're always somewhere else, and our phones are partially to blame. But at the end of the day, it's something that each of us have to decide to do. We have to say, you know what? I'm going to retake control of my life and gain that balance by putting my phone away, by closing the laptop, by making sure that whoever I'm around, whoever I'm in front of, that I'm actually there with them. I'm going to be where my feet are. And when I really started to understand that, that's when it really made a change for me. That's when I really started seeing my relationships excel and do better. And actually my businesses started doing better as well because I disconnected from them when it was time to do that. And so for everyone, we're in a different place. Some people are still working that 70-hour work week. Some are working 40 or less maybe. But in the day, wherever you are in that moment, be there. So when you're on work, be at work. When you're with your family, be with your family. When you're out playing, doing something that you enjoy doing, be there in that moment. And I think that that's what's really served me well to create balance in my life.
Yeah. And with a cybersecurity and an IT background, I'll tell you, I've gone through, I hate to use the buzz term digital detox, but I've spent the last 9 months and literally one of my partners and my web people were chasing me because I didn't answer something on Saturday because I sat down with an old fashioned book. Right. And they're like, you haven't answered in like 4 hours. I'm like, did the world end? Is the website down? You know, the phone didn't ring. So, right. And it's a matter of being present. You talk about time blocking and I'm kind of jumping around from the thing here, but is that something that you're able to do to enable you to be more present?
Yes, definitely. So I'm married. I've been married for 7 years and I believe I've become a better and better husband every year. And one of the ways I've been able to do that is by when I'm with my wife, she knows that, okay, we're together, right? Like we're going to hang out together. We're going to spend time together. And because of that, I've been able to really use my calendar and time block. So she knows that there's certain hours of the day that I am focused on work and we both work from home. So if she walks in and starts wanting to have a conversation with me, she knows, oh, okay, it's 11:30 in the morning, you know, 11:30. And this is when he's really focused on this project every single day. It's in the calendar. I've blocked out that time. So the conversation isn't going to, be where your feet are. My feet are at that point really engraved in something serious work related. And she knows that. We've made that really clear by setting that expectation. So for me, time blocking is something simple like that, saying, hey, this is what I'm doing at this time. I'll have this time later that I'll devote to something else, but making sure that you're really intentional with that. So I think that many of us, we just want to go with the flow, I find, Tim, that we just kind of be like, oh, well, when the work comes in, I'll handle it. It's much better to say, this is an hour block right here, an hour window where I'm going to only focus on work. And if some, you know, distraction comes in, fine. But at the end of the day, what I'm doing is I'm focusing on work during this time. And then later on, say, this is when I'm going to even take a break for lunch, or this is when I'm going to just shut everything off. But making sure that you actually block out that time to do that is really important. And then it also sets, for me at least, it sets an expectation of, okay, I've got 2 hours to get this done. And then after that, I'm going to spend some time with my friends and with my wife. So I've got 2 hours to knock this out. I find when I give myself that deadline, I work a lot harder and a lot faster because I want it to be done so that when I do leave, I can actually go be with those people and enjoy the time. And again, not being like, oh, I didn't get enough done today. But when you set that expectation and that time block for yourself, for me, again, this has helped a lot.
That's nice. And you talk about time for yourself. So what does your relaxation time look like that keeps you recharged? Is it active? Is it passive? Do you blend the both?
Yeah, a little bit of both. And I'll explain why. Again, going back to me being married, my wife enjoys watching movies with me. We don't do that a whole lot, but we watch movies every now and then. Me personally, that's not really how I'm wired. So for me, my relaxation time is I love health. I love fitness. So I like to go out and get a good healthy meal. I work out every day in the middle of the day and I work out outside. I mean, I'm in Jacksonville, Florida, and yes, some days it's 100 degrees outside, but I'm still going to go for a run every single day and going to go do a completely outdoor workout. I love that. I love spending time on the beach with people, and I'm not just a guy who lays around the beach. Actually, most people make fun of me when they see this, but I don't take a towel and I don't take a chair. I just lay down straight in the sand and I bring a couple toys, you know, like I'll bring a soccer ball because I love soccer. I'll bring like paddleball, all the type of, you know, the toys that probably kids like to bring. Yep. I just enjoy that stuff. And that's how I really refresh, is by doing those things. That's how I relax. It's just me being active. And I find that, kind of bringing it all back to business, I make much better business decisions when I'm actually actively pursuing my way of relaxation and refreshing myself. So I really prioritize this stuff over business at times, because I find that my decisions are much better when I'm doing these things.
And studies show that's true, right? You can work your 70 or 100 hours a week, but if you're not getting time away, you lose perspective. You lose the clarity. So absolutely. And I love the idea of not taking a towel, right? If I showing up on the beach in sandals with some things to play with and other people to find and do stuff, that doesn't sound so bad.
That's it. People are always like, you're just laying down the sand. I'm like, yeah, we're all going to get sandy anyway, right? Might as well just embrace it.
So one less thing to launder.
There you go. That's good.
Have you found your time between personal and business socially has collapsed in recent years at all?
Yeah, I would say a little bit, actually. As I get closer and closer to what I feel is real purposeful and meaningful work for myself, I actually find that the people that I spend time with and that are really meaningful to me are in similar forms of business, or people that I'm able to help or that are able to help me. So I find it kind of blends together, but it all comes back to making sure that we know like when to talk shop and when not to, because we've all got those people that they can only talk business. There's nothing else, you know? So I'm really careful how much time I surround myself with people that are more in that mode all the time. So, but the people that I'm around, yeah, they actually, I found that my personal life and my professional life, a lot of them have really merged closer together than I'd say they ever have before.
Yeah. And one of the things I learned a few years back from a friend actually is he retired and he had given up most of his social life outside of some of his church activities. And, you know, we were in a world where we traveled a couple hundred days a year. And when he retired, he didn't know what to do because all his friends were his business friends and his customers all over, you know, the world. So he couldn't walk out his door and go down the street and see everybody. So it was a real adjustment because he had never drawn that line. It had just been, you know, 35 years of, hey, my friends are my business.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a realization that a lot of us have and will have. It's, you know, the thing is, I love that we're talking about this because, Tim, I believe that some of the listeners say they'll get to hear this and realize they need to invest in their own lives outside of work as well. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, if you have great relationships at work, that's fantastic, but replicate that in your personal life, in your neighborhood, wherever you're at. It's been so meaningful for me. So I'm passionate about that. I'm really glad you brought that up. It's a really good point.
Thank you. Let's talk a little bit about entrepreneurs and building their brands, because that's really what you help people do.
Love it.
So one of the things I want to ask is, should every company have a blog?
This is such a good question. And, you know, years ago, I probably would have answered it differently, but I'm going to say only if you have time to be active with it. Only if you have time to be active with it. Because I find a lot of people, they just assume they have to have a blog and they don't have time for it. And if you're only posting once a year, I don't think it's really that good of a thing for you to be doing. Instead, you'd be better off using that one piece of content and making some sort of ebook or checklist or video, something that you can use to actually help people with. And for people who don't have time, another great thing to do is get on guest posts. If you're like, you know what, I can write a post once or twice a year, just go on guest posts. Find a great place to actually just share the information and to link back to yourself. I think that's a really great thing to be able to do. So I think that we have to have something though on our websites that is a free educational element. So if it's not a blog, somehow, some way, you have to have free education. The world of business is changing quite a bit. Many people, especially younger generations, they make buying decisions based off the free education they get from that company. Myself included in this. I'm in my mid-30s, but for me, I'm going to make a buying decision based off the free education that comes toward that. Example, I recently invested in an SMS company to use their service, but there was three of them that everyone recommended. They're all really good. I went to the one and decided to sign up with the one that had the most free education, where it was like their blog was really, hey, here's how you succeed. Here's how you do this. Talk to our service. They're available all the time. Here's our people on podcasts. We're just sharing that wisdom, that knowledge. And the other two were really silent. They didn't have a blog. They looked like they had a great product, but I couldn't find the free educational element. So for me, I decided to skip it. So again, I don't think everyone needs a blog. And it's a long answer to your question. I don't think everyone needs a blog, but I do think everyone needs some form of educational element to offer, whatever that may be for them.
So one of the things, a lot of my clients and a lot of my listeners are salespeople, and they're, some of them own their own businesses. I mean, just to kind of set the stage, some of them are a couple $1 million a year business reselling other people's products. Some of them are a couple $100 million a year, and they're representing brands and they're authorized for. Any advice for them on finding that middle space between the brand they sell and adding that expertise out to their customer set for the people, you know, because it is a research, learn, buying decision kind of world.
Yeah, I think that the balance just has to be, we have to remember at the end of the day that every business, no matter what you're selling, it's all H to H, it's all human to human at one point, right? And I think that some of these bigger companies especially forget that. We think we're business to business, we're selling to another company, but at the end of the day, somebody is making that decision, right? And I think that we can remember that and put ourselves in their shoes and say, okay, if I'm new to this, whatever this product might be, then what does somebody need to know about it? Like, how do they need to be able, like, what do they need to see or know to be able to succeed with this? I think if you can start answering those questions and kind of bridge that gap between somebody who's just getting started with it and somebody who can succeed with it, then you're good. And for some products, it might be really simple. Like if you're selling, let's just say you're selling some sort of data service, you know, like you're actually going to be storing people's data and how to do it efficiently and then just share it with just their company. I'm thinking a company like LastPass, where they're keeping your passwords and then helping you share it among your different people in your company or whatever it might be. That's kind of complex. So you want a lot of education for that. If you're selling a lawnmower and you want to tell people how to start it and how to cut nice lines in their yard, right? That's a very different amount of education that has to go into that, because it's a much simpler service that you're trying to provide to people or that you're trying to sell to them. So really every company has to ask that for themselves, but they have to say, how can I help the human at the other end succeed with what I'm doing, and how much education needs to be involved in that?
That's good advice. With that, you know, one of the things that can be done is education is a podcast. You do one, you have a very popular one. So why don't you talk about that for a second?
Yeah, sure. So I'll talk about mine real quick, and then we'll talk more about podcasting in general, because I love this topic. I love blogging, and that's how I got my start. I actually started with a faith-based blog about 7 years ago now. So I started writing on my Christian faith. That was really important to me, and went multi-author with it. And then I found out that I really liked podcasting because I could do it a lot more regularly. And it was pretty quick. I could just talk, and I love to hear myself talk. And I've been told I have a face for radio. So here I am. But my podcast, Creating a Brand, I launched it last year, actually. It was 2019. And it was something that I really wanted to do. I put a lot of time and energy to it because I wanted to help entrepreneurs that were really struggling to make that first or next step, just on those topics that were really important to them. So I launched and we saw a ton of success immediately, built a community around it. And it's been a lot of fun. It's been very fulfilling. And just getting to hear from the people I'm helping has made it really worthwhile. So I've had a lot of fun with podcasting. It's been great. And yes, podcasting can, I would say that podcasting is good for a lot of people. I don't know how deep you want to dive into that, but Tim, we can definitely dive more into that if you'd like to.
So go a little bit deeper, right? Because the one thing you'll see is, you know, if you look, there's a lot of articles out there that says podcasts, you can't monetize a podcast. And that's not, frankly, I do this so I can talk to people like you, right? It's mm-hmm. a chance for me to talk to business owners and learn and, you know, educate people along the way. Mm-hmm. So not everything's about converting directly to cash. So I guess one of the things is, you know, what can a podcast be used for? How can you build your brand with it?
Yeah. I'm glad you brought the monetization side, because most people, their very first thing is like, I want to start a podcast because I want to make money. And not saying that you won't or can't, you definitely can, but a lot of it really is top of the funnel. This is your educational piece. This is how people like to get information. I've seen some businesses where they just talk about their business is all they talk about. And they're short episodes, they're 10, 15 minutes. And it's just like, boom, here's how you do this with our company. Here's how you do that. Here's how you do this. And that type of thing is really helpful. That's great to have. But now if you're trying to actually grow your brand, actually, I think that starting a podcast is one of the best things you can do right now. I say one of the best because there's one thing that I think is actually better than starting a podcast, and that's being a guest on podcasts. I call that OPP, Other People's Podcasts. And it's something that I've devoted a lot of time to. So I don't know exactly where I'm at. I'm around 100 podcasts I've been on in the last, this year, I suppose. And it's done really well for my business, even better than my own podcast has. And it's because if you can find the right audience to speak to, one, you get to add value to them, but also if they're interested, they're going to look you up, right? And I think that people need to consider that maybe the right answer isn't I need to start my own. Maybe it's I just need to find other podcasts to be a guest on. Because I've personally found that that works extremely well, and that really does help grow your brand.
So that's how I found you. And it's something that you're one of the co-creators of, right?
Oh, yes. Podmatch.com, right?
Podmatch.com.
Yeah.
You know, I will give you kudos, man, because you built a really cool app, and I want you to talk a little bit about it and how people can use it and find guests. And it's been revolutionary because I'd been working my LinkedIn profile on a 25-year-old professional network to find people. And I'll tell you, I found a half a dozen really great people, including yourself, inside of the first week. So talk about what you did with that.
That's great. Thank you for sharing. I appreciate that. I love talking about this because it's kind of my baby right now, right? You know, I think we all feel that way. So thank you. That means a lot to me. You just called my kid cute. So I appreciate it. You know?
Very cute.
but podmatch.com, the whole idea was, could we actually help podcast guests and hosts find each other? Could we do it in a quicker, more efficient way? And we do it through a matching service. It's literally the concept. We took it from dating website or from dating apps. We looked at Hinge, Tinder, and a couple others. And we just said, how are they doing this? And why aren't we doing this in the podcasting space? So it was the same idea. When you register an account as a guest, let's say you're an author of a book on productivity, it'll find productivity podcast hosts that might be looking for a guest like you, and vice versa. It'll flip on both sides. And it's something that we're offering for free right now, which we're really excited to do because at the end of the day, we really want to serve the podcasting industry. And the idea for this actually came from just looking at what people's problems were. We found a lot of people in the podcasting space asking for something like this. They didn't say it directly, but they're like, I just wish I could find better guests. And I just wish I could find more, hosts saying, I wish I could find, more guests and then more hosts. Like we had people talking on both sides. And we just offered a solution to that problem by creating podmatch.com. And it's been really cool. So our AI matching core is really fun and we're continuously improving it, but I appreciate you using it. I'm glad that we were actually able to make this interview happen through that. It's really cool.
And I'll tell you one of the things I picked up, sort of a new guy tip from somebody using the service, is when people reach out, look and see the words they're using to identify themselves. Because after my initial profile, I went in, looked at yours and a couple other people that had reached out and realized that there were words there that I hadn't chosen for my matches that were more commonly being used. So,
yeah, that's smart. I hope that everyone's like you, honestly, Tim. That's good.
Look, most people that are entrepreneurs are going to figure it out, right?
So. Yeah, I hope so. Thanks for the plug on Podmatch, though. I appreciate that, man.
Oh, no, I'm happy to. It's great. You focus on people building the brand. So where do people most often miss the mark on that?
Yeah, I think that in today's world, the biggest thing that people don't realize is the importance of MVP, minimal viable product or service, whatever it is that you're trying to do. People wait for perfection. And I say wait for perfection because it's impossible to gain. But so many of us, we just get stuck in this limbo mode of, okay, this is nice, it's cool, but it doesn't look like apple.com or it doesn't look like nike.com. And their social media is huge. And I don't have pictures like that yet. So I really can't get started. And I find people today, we compare ourselves to these very, very established brands, which you know, Tim, they've been around for 20 plus years, some of these guys. And obviously when you're a multi-billion dollar company, you're gonna be doing a lot better than somebody with a few hundred dollar startup, right? But the problem is we compare ourselves to that. We look at it and say, well, I can't start until I look more like this. And I always tell people, don't compare your day one to someone else's year 20. Don't compare your day one to someone else's year 20. And I think that some of us want to do that. We get caught in this perfectionist mindset. The truth is, whatever you have today, if you believe it adds value to people's lives, the best thing you can do is launch it where it is. Even if it's not beautiful yet, it will get there. But the thing is, we all just have to learn, okay, it's ready. It's not great yet. It's not beautiful yet, but I know that it's going to serve somebody well. I need to go ahead and launch today. And I think that that's one of the biggest problems I see is people just not ready to launch and they just kind of keep it on hold for far too long.
Do you see people worry about details that are ultimately irrelevant?
Oh, yes. Yes. 100%.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, like, sorry to cut you off there. Think a lot of people, we get involved in the business instead of working on the business. So we see the very small things. We're like, well, my calendar isn't really streamlined enough. I need to find a solution for that. When it's such a small piece of what you do. And I've been guilty of this. I'm a details guy. I'm a bit administrative and I can get caught up in the little things. When you step back and you say, okay, what is my goal again? What am I trying to do? Okay. My calendar, how well it performs, how pretty the email they get is when they confirm a session that they want to do coaching wise with me. That doesn't matter as much as how am I going to actually get a client or how am I going to actually connect with them. And I think that many of us, we get stuck working in the business instead of on the business. When you work in the business, although it is important at times, it doesn't help grow it. That's when you're working on the business, it's going to really help grow it.
Talk about working on the business. Helping others is something that truly drives you. Everything I've listened to that you've done, that's always come up as a topic. Has that always been the case for you?
No, it hasn't actually. In my early 20s, I was getting into some real estate. So I did a tech startup years ago with real estate. So you might remember this. They're all over the place now, but those 365 degree tours, if you're looking at a home, you can kind of like drag on the screen. You can like look at the roof. You can flip over to behind you. So I helped develop the original tech that was actually used to create that. And so we were posting these things on the MLS. I remember at one point it was a 17-year-old kid with three photographers and three editors working with me or something along those lines. But I had a full team. We were working on it. And then, you know, I just became passionate about real estate. So I saw it at 17. I'm like, as soon as I turn 18, I'm getting rental properties. And thankfully I had the money to do it. So I started doing that. And then I saw a magazine. I can't recall what magazine it was, but it had like a most successful under 30 list, like 30 under 30 or something. It might've been Forbes, but basically showing like, here are the guys and the ladies that are just crushing it in the world. And I saw that and I was like, that is going to be me. Like Alex Sanfilippo's name will be on that list, guaranteed. And I had this whole mindset of I have to be successful, have to make money, have to make money, have to succeed. And I became a very lonely person. A lot of what I'm sharing with you now is me on the other side of a mindset that I used to have. So I was well on my way. And then you might remember this as well, but 2006, 2007, the economy really crashed. And a guy who thought he knew a lot of real estate, turns out I knew nothing about it because I could not see that coming. And I went from being very well off to being extremely in debt with a lot of really bad investments. And at that point, I kind of hit rock bottom, if you will. And it was in that time where I found new friends, people to be around that were actually not just caring about money. They're actually caring about people, that I decided that, you know what, I need to shift something. And it's when I started saying this, this line that I use with everything, I seek to be a person of value, not a person of profit. So when you think Alex Sanfilippo, I want you to think a person of value, not a person of profit. And ever since then, one of those people around me started modeling that, that's who I wanted to become. And ever since then, I've really decided that helping others is my primary focus. And the profit, I believe, will follow that when I'm helping somebody else succeed. And that's what I've devoted my entire life to.
I think it's such a positive thing, but it's also a way that your network, when you do that, expands, because people come to you when they truly have a need. But they come back when they know that you can deliver because you've connected them in the right places. It's a brilliant approach.
Yeah, I recommend it to everybody. I found it to be so powerful, and it's very fulfilling too. Like, you're helping somebody and it ends up helping you as well. I mean, that's a win-win for me.
Yeah, definitely. So you've built your own companies. You've done some startups. You're building brands now. You're helping other people build brands. How do you help people define a culture, or how do you live your culture inside your brand if you're the business owner?
Yeah, the first thing that everything begins with in my mind is purpose. So the why behind the what. You know, there's something that we are going to do, and that's the what, but why are you doing it is so important. I believe that all culture goes back to that question, really establishing why you're doing something, the reason for it. And then you have to model it. You have to look at that every day. So for me, the only way I can keep myself off my craft and getting too involved in it is by remembering, okay, Alex, you're doing this because you're a person of value. And so my personal goal over the next 10 years is to help 4,000 entrepreneurs create successful businesses. I want to see 4,000 people profiting because of me. And if you do the math, let's just say I'm 30, I'm 32 right now, but let's just say I'm 30. That's more than 365 a year, which means there's more than one a day, which means I have to get really creative at some point to figure this out, right? But that's one of my goals. And when I can sit back and actually remember that, instead of just remembering, okay, like, here's what I got to do, here's this, it really develops the right culture and mindset within myself. And then thankfully, everyone I work with, it kind of just moves into them because I remind them of the bigger vision. And it's really important. So I think the verbiage that you use has to follow that why. Example, with Podmatch, we're starting this and my partner, he was calling the people users that are on there, which they're technically users, yes, but I started calling them members. And then if they sign up for an affiliate link, they're partners. And that is the verbiage I use in them. Like, they're members. They're in this with us. They're part of the team. They are members of the team. And if they decide they want to be an affiliate, which is part of the system, then they are partners with us. They are people that are working with us. And just simple things like this, using verbiage more like that, that really connects back to your why, has helped me so much keep the right culture and mindset in everything that I do.
That's a really nuanced answer to really engaging people. And one of your things is I've heard you talk in the past about social media platforms and not being productive on them and your approach in creating a brand, and I get the feeling it's the same in Podmatch, right, is, you know, creating value every time somebody logs on. Can you talk about the importance of that?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, like if somebody's trusting with their time, whether it's through your social media, through logging into your website, whatever it might be, if somebody's trusting with their time, it needs to add value. I mean, people are looking for something that's going to help them today. And not this is the reason that you want to do this, but people will leave really quick if you're not helping them, right? People will unsubscribe. People will not log back in. You want to make sure that you're adding that value right away. And a good way to do this, you know, you talked about social media for a minute, so I'll mention this. This is another mistake that many entrepreneurs make. We assume we have to be all places. So, you know, we talked about a blog. You have to have a blog. You have to have a podcast. You have to have a YouTube channel. You have to be on every social media platform. You know, all these different things that we all assume we need to do just aren't true. What you need to do is find where your tribe is, the people that are going to really work with you, that are interested in you, and do your best to impact them and add value every chance you get. So an example of this, I was spreading myself too thin. For a while, I assumed I needed to be on every social platform. I spent a lot of time on all of them. And the main one being at this point, this was like a year ago. I know TikTok's kind of taking over, but about a year ago, more people were talking about Instagram. So I was like, okay, I got to really be on Instagram. But I found out that they weren't interested in what I offered. So it wasn't valuable to them. So I was like, well, why am I doing this? Where people that are really interested in what we're doing, they're on LinkedIn. So let me go add value on LinkedIn because they're actually receiving it well and saying this is helpful. And instead of me doing anything on Instagram. And, you know, a lot of people immediately were like, Alex, what are you doing? You need to post more on Instagram. It's really growing fast. But my tribe wasn't there. The people that I was actually adding value to helping weren't there. So I didn't need to be there either. And I think that a lot of us assume we have to be everywhere or wherever is trending at that time, which just isn't true. You know, I do recommend give them all a shot, but find the ones where your people are that you're adding value to and just continue to pour into them, press into them, and do everything that you can to help without spreading yourself thin along the way. And that's been something that's been really helpful for me to really just add that value to people's lives is by knowing where I need to be.
So how does somebody find where their tribe is, especially online?
Yeah, a lot of it, you know, online, thankfully, analytics are becoming a thing that are, you can use anywhere now, right? I mean, if you log, we talked about Twitter, we talked about Instagram, I get them all mixed up. But basically there's a spot that you can see all your analytics and then you can also go to your website. So something very simple is if you use WordPress, you can use Google Analytics, which scares some people, but if that scares you, then use the built-in one. They have it's called Jetpack.
Jetpack,
With WordPress, it's fine. Honestly, for this type of data that I'm talking about, that is more than enough. You can go on there and see who's showing up, where they're coming from. If they're coming from social media, you can see which platform they're coming from. And that can tell you something. So if you realize that you're posting 15 times a day on let's just say Twitter, or 20 times a day on Twitter, and you don't get a single referral, no one clicks on anything, it's probably pretty low value at that point. Like you need to know that. But if you're posting in a Facebook group and you've got 100 people visiting every day because of that, stop Twitter. Just leave it on autopilot somehow. You know, find one of those services. I use Buffer that automatically posts things for me. So I'm still posting there, but I'm not going to look at it. But that Facebook group, I'm going to go spend intentional time there because it's actually helping those people. So you can drive into analytics just about anywhere. Again, Jetpack with WordPress for using that. If you're using the social media platforms, most of them now have very easy ways to see the analytics of who's watching, who's listening. And then when you know your people, like Tim, you're great about knowing who's listening to this podcast. And I really admire that because not enough people do that. They assume, oh, my podcast is this. I'm like, well, how do you know that? Well, you know, that's who I'm talking to. I'm like, well, are you? Like, you need to go look. And then you need to actually talk to those people, not somebody else. Because I found a lot of people, they don't succeed because they're not talking to their actual audience that they've earned. And we're always going to have to adjust. I mean, initially when I started creating a brand, I thought my audience would be different than they are today, but I responded to who my audience is and who continues to build. And the more I find that and hone that in, the better that I've been able to do with it.
So you're a detail guy. You're obviously good at analytics. One of the things is, you know, what advice do you have on finding the right metrics, whether it's on your website, whether it's in your sales data? And the second part is, how do you not get paralyzed by all the information that is available?
that's a good question right there. I think that data overload is a real thing, right?
I think
a lot of us can get stuck over there like really easily. But, you know, I think that the best thing that I can remember to do when it comes to data analytics is to have a balance. We can get addicted to checking that stuff every day. And I've definitely been guilty of that. Like, you know, you're looking at your bank every day because it's coming in real time. If you're using something like Stripe, you can literally swipe up and hit refresh and see more dollars rolling in sometimes. Not saying that's all the time, but you know,
on good days, you can though.
On good days, you can. But it's not healthy to look at, because if it goes back to your why, your big picture, why you're doing something, if it's not specifically, and it shouldn't be, to make that dollar continue to increase, if you're looking at that more than you're helping somebody or doing something to add value, then you're doing yourself a disservice. You're taking time that you can be using. And honestly, you know, it's like I say this, when you go to a gym and there's always like that guy who's just looking himself in the mirror, you're not getting any stronger by looking at yourself in the mirror. And I think that if we just continuously look at our analytics just to look at them, then we're not doing ourselves any service. What we need to do is maybe even set a time. And I've had to do that like once a week. I used to have a reminder saying, go check the analytics and everything. I would dive in deep for about 30, 45 minutes. And then I would write down what my action are based off of that. So I'm not like addicted to it or continuously look at it. I actually know, okay, here's what they're telling me. Here's what I need to do. I'll go look at it again a week later. And honestly, by stepping away like that, you can actually see results happening. But if you're too glued to it, it's not really beneficial. We have to be willing to step away from that a little bit and just go after what we know we're supposed to be doing.
How do you use those analytics when you do take the time to look at them to determine content planning, direction, strategy?
Yeah, it's a great question. A lot of it just comes down to engagement overall. So did people engage with it? And did I hear anybody say anything about it? So some things people really comment on, not just on social media, people will email in, people will be in the community, really start talking about it, it will create a lot of buzz. And it goes back to some reflection. You sit back, I've got whiteboards behind me right now, I've got three of them. And one's empty right now, which always makes me so excited because it means I got a mastermind session coming up, you know, like I'll be able to brainstorm something. But I'll write down and be like, okay, everyone really liked the question, what are you struggling with in business right now? That was a recent one I posted. Simple. I didn't think much of it, but I asked the question, what are you struggling with in business right now? And I had more responses than I've had to anything in months. I was like, whoa, okay, why were people talking about that? Okay, let me look at who was talking about it. Okay, how can I build more content around this? And then I'll try simple things like, okay, it was, you know, I posted that at 3 o'clock on a Tuesday. So let me try posting something else at 3 o'clock on a Tuesday and see if it gets the same engagement on a different topic. I'll just try that. And it's like, okay, no, that didn't work, but they really like the question. What are they struggling with? So how can I be able to create more content like that? And of course, I always try to spin everything positively. So the next week, what I tried to do, or 2 weeks later, I tried what's really working well for you in business right now. And it engaged really well. And people liked the questions that had to do exactly with their business. And that's just, again, my tribe. You might find something totally different. You post that question, you might get crickets, right? At the end of the day, it's again, goes back to, do you know who's listening and what they're looking for? So for me, that's what I do with all that data, that analytics. I really sit down and think, okay, why did this do so well? Was it the timing? Was it actually what the content was about? Was it the way that it was very engaging? Was it the right kind of question to pose? You have to really sit down and think about these things. And for me, a lot of that's come back to not my own expertise, but I've had to go back and actually read about that. You know, I'll look for content online. You can Google anything these days, right? I'll see, okay, like, why do people like this question? Are other people asking this question? Where did this come from? And look for other like related topics to talk about. And doing that has been really beneficial. And that's what I do with my data, is I just try those different things.
Nice. And so I'll admit I cheat. I have two other people, one of which is a data scientist, that I'll go, hey, Alan, I'm thinking of doing this. And he's like, no, Tim, you're an idiot. This is the metric that matters.
You know, I'm not the best at this data stuff. Like I am decent at it, but I do the same thing. I seek wise counsel with everything I do. I'm like, hey, can someone help me with what this means? So like sometimes it's Google, sometimes it's actually people. I'm like, can you explain what I should be doing with this? So it's actually good that you do that. Yeah. I hope he's a little nicer to you sometimes, but you know.
No, he's generally a good guy. He kept me out of more fires than I care to admit over the years. So
that's good. I love that.
You talked about what people were struggling with in business. How's the pandemic and everything going on changed what you do in your business and what your clients are going through?
Yeah, I mean, it's been different for every industry, right? I mean, it's been crazy. I've had some people that it was really bad for, hurt their business really bad. I have many friends that lost jobs throughout this, but a lot of them, some of them, meaning the ones that have lost jobs, I had one in particular be like, this was the push I really needed to finally press go on this business I've been pushing off for so long, like just been scared to do. I've been so comfortable, I just couldn't do it. They lost their job. Now they're launching something. I had one guy in particular I was just talking to last week about it. He is so excited about what he's doing now. Like he's already making money. It's just been a couple months in his own business that he's been thinking about for years. But he just was always like, I was just too comfortable. Like I never felt like I could pull the trigger. Now I was forced to do it. So in some ways, it's been really beneficial for people. What I've noticed from a market standpoint in general is that people needed more free community style content during this time. They needed to, like, they were all sitting at home, right? So we needed a way to feel part of something. Really important for us to feel like, okay, we're part of a tribe, we're part of a community. And then they're also looking for free educational element. Like, again, going back to the free education, people are looking for a way to learn what they need to implement what they want to do or to try a new business. And they want to do it for free because everyone's working on a more tight budget, if you will. And so I made some adjustments. The creating a brand community used to not be free. It used to be you pay to get in, then everything inside of it was free. But now we flipped it. So we said, okay, you know what? Like, this was the first week this happened. Like, the whole thing's going to a free model. And then everything inside that we previously had for free will now be paid. And we flipped that switch and actually did really well. We had a lot of people really appreciating it. Some great feedback from doing that. But that was one of those pivots that we just knew we had to make from day one. And then we had to change a little bit of the content, the way people were consuming content, the topics we're talking about. Like, it was funny, in the beginning of April, I had a really big episode coming out about public speaking. Not the right time to talk about something public speaking wise. I still haven't published it. It won't come out for another 3 months is when it'll actually be coming out. I had another one about actually going out and networking. Huge interview, one of my biggest I've ever had. We pushed it off for 2 more months. And we talked about more things like how you can build a business inside, how you can pivot your business, how you can set yourself up for success. We had to make those adjustments and transitions if we really wanted to be able to do well. And so that's, for me, that's what I've seen has happened. It also freed up a lot of my time. So we launched podmatch.com. We started on March 10th, 2019, and we launched into beta June 15th, 2019. I mean, 3 months and 5 days. And we did good. I was excited about it.
That's incredibly fast for development of a new site, of a new app.
Yeah. I mean, it was a lean SaaS startup. Me and my partner, he's a genius. He can do a lot of the work. We started off on these whiteboards and just went for it, man. Like, we worked hard, but it's one of those things that this time, I think we all say someday, right? I think COVID-19 is everyone's someday. So yeah. We just knew we had to take action.
Well, it's better than just sitting there and being paralyzed by fear though.
Yes, you know, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
You're a big fan of Feedly. Right.
Yeah, I am.
So,
yeah.
The reading service. So what's three things that you read on Feedly? Not the fact that you use it, but three things that are must reads for you.
Yeah. So three places I subscribe to that are really good for me. Search Engine Journal is a really cool site. They post a lot of great stuff. And I love blogging. I love SEO. That's always going to be like a deep passion of mine. So just getting to learn something new is always really interesting to me. That's one that I like. I'll flip it to something totally different now. There's a website that I also subscribe to through Feedly called uncrate.com. And it's like, I think they used to call it gear for guys. They changed what it was. But basically, just think all the coolest stuff you could ever, like the coolest houses you've ever seen, the coolest boats, the coolest cars, anything amazing. Like they post on there like one or two things a day. And I'm always like, oh, I just want to see what that looks like. You know, like, so I like that one. That's another one that's really fun. And then the last one is, as a lot of my podcasts are on there. So I like to, not mine personally, podcasts I subscribe to. So maybe just to quickly see the topics that I like, which are always something different, but I've been really getting into, especially during this time, like how I can kind of up my health game a little bit, like eating habits, nutrition habits, exercise, and different things like that. And more from a natural standpoint. So I know that's not actually like a certain website, but those are the type of things I'm looking for that come up in that feed that are important to me right now.
But you're following trends and topics. So that makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Cool. You run a business. So the question I'm always wrestling with business owners with is it better to be smaller and more profitable or to really reach for the brass ring and go for that hyperscale and hope it pays off? Any thoughts on that one?
Yeah. I mean, that's a fine line right there. You know, that's the difference between a millionaire and a billionaire right there.
It is.
And unfortunately, a lot of it has to do with luck and a lot of it has to do with timing. It's a matter of you really understanding what you're doing. So for me, listen, small and profitable is a fantastic place to be. And I think that more people just need to be okay with that. We don't need to look at these big billionaires and people that are making just gobs of money, like crazy amounts of money, and compare ourselves to them. If you are living in a place that's really comfortable, it's enabling you to do what you feel like you are wanting to do with your life and your time, that's fantastic. Don't compare yourself to someone else and be like, oh, I need my business to be this big. Because I think many entrepreneurs, we kind of think it's got to be huge because I want to be on the map, like all these different mindsets that go through our head about this type of thing. But really, if you've got a small, profitable business and it's working well, it's helping you, it's helping your client, that's okay. Now, if you think you have something that you say, you know what, this could be more, it could help more people, it could serve more people, it could serve my family better, and you really believe that and the timing is right, then yes, I say go for it. I'm always careful to going out and getting too many loans and things like that. But if we look at the Amazon model, Amazon didn't make money for the first 10 or 12 years or something like that. I mean, they were millions and millions of dollars in debt and just driving themselves into that hole. And then one day it flipped. And that's what they always said would happen. But that was a really, I mean, one, it was lucky. And the timing was absolutely, could not have been better for them with the way that technology just took off while that business was growing. But if you believe you have one of those, you've got to be willing to take the risk. But again, don't do it because you feel like you have to. Do it if you know that you have something that's really going to serve the world well, and you just know there's more to be done with it.
So you just recently did an episode on your podcast, and I forget the gentleman's name who wrote the book on Bezos and the shareholder letters. Does that tie into, you know, A, can you complete the sentence for me? And B, can you tie that into that philosophy?
Yeah. So yeah, the Bezos letter, that was Steve Anderson.
That's it.
Great episode. Really good. I mean, that book was like, I remember when I picked it up, I was just in shock. I'm like, I've always dreamed of like just meeting with Jeff Bezos, having a conversation with him. This book was probably just as good as that, you know, like it was really a fascinating read. Steve did a great job on it. So yeah, a lot of this came from that because I wanted to dive more into what they've been able to do. And at the end of the day, Jeff Bezos' mindset is not, let's build the biggest company in the world. His mindset is a customer obsession. He is obsessed with his customers. And everything they do is devoted to making customers have the best possible experience that they can. A great example is people don't realize, when you buy something from Amazon and it shows up, you open the box, whatever is in that box is easy to open. You don't need scissors normally. You don't need to unwrap anything. Like, you know, you buy some things from a store and you're like, oh my gosh, I need scissors. I need to unwrap this. I don't even know how to get this plastic off this thing. Their idea is, no, we want the customer to be instantly satisfied when they get it. And them having that mindset has been what drove them to be a bigger company. It wasn't, we're going to build the biggest company in the world. He said, no, we're going to serve our customer the best way we can and see if that will scale. And it has. And another thing that he talks about in his letter to shareholders every year, he talks about failure, which is something that we don't talk about enough. It was 2 years ago, I was reading his letter before I even read this book. And he said in it, if we don't make multiple multi-billion dollar mistakes, we will stop growing. If that's a letter that people that are writing my paycheck and keeping me employed, and I'm telling them I'm going to make multiple multi-billion dollar mistakes, I'm like, why would he say this to these people? But it's because he understands that in order to succeed, he has to fail along the way to test things, to try new things, to be able to actually expand and grow the way they want to. Jeff Bezos and Amazon, fascinating. We can all learn a lot from it. Whether we like Amazon or not, they've done a fantastic job from a business perspective.
They have, and they've raised the level of expectations, not just in the consumer space, but I've seen it in the business-to-business space over the last 20 years. I remember sitting at my desk as a kid, signing up for Amazon, you know, for the first time. And then now, you know, global telecom companies are expected to deliver on that same standard. It's changed everything.
It really has. I mean, if you're not delivering something for free in 2 days, people are like, what? I got to wait 4 days for this and I have to pay for it, right?
Yeah, exactly. What do you mean I have to pay freight?
You know, a little secret on Amazon, you're paying for freight, but they just roll it into the cost of what you're paying for, but people love it. It's fine. They're like, I don't mind paying a couple of extra dollars. It's going to be here in 2 days and I don't have to pay for shipping, right? I'm doing air quotes there, but it's the truth of the matter.
It is. So I really appreciate the time. Tell everybody again, you know, what can they expect to find at, you know, creating a brand and why should they go there? And then talk about Podmatch one more time if you would too.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Thank you again. So first off, creatingabrand.com. That's my hub. That's where I do everything. So you can find me, you can find the podcast, all that stuff there. If you want a quick way to get there, you can just text the word connect to 1-904-299-8992. So again, that's 1-904-299-8992. And if you text the word connect there, it'll actually just automatically connect you to the community there, which is completely free. If you're interested in talking to another entrepreneur, not just me, but other people in the community, we're all there to help each other out and collaborate together to help each other succeed. So, and then there's the podcast, Creating a Brand Podcast. You can find all that at creatingabrand.com. And then Podmatch. If you have a podcast or you want to be a guest on podcasts, check it out. Podmatch.com, completely free. AI will automatically connect you with the right people so you can start having great conversations like Tim and I are having today. So, but yeah, that's it. That's everything about me. And I really appreciate the time today. This was awesome to be part of.
It was really good having you on. I learned a ton, which is Alex had such a great comment there at the end. Podcasting is like free coaching. Every day we work with high-performance salespeople and people that are aspiring to become top salespeople within their companies. If you're interested in learning more about that, visit timkubiak.com. There's an offer to sign up for a first free high-performance sales coaching session. It's a 60-minute session, pure sales coaching for one of your must-win game-changer opportunities. Thanks for listening. If you haven't already done so, please subscribe to the podcast using your favorite service. And if you don't get the weekly Sales Leader newsletter, go to timkubiak.com, sign up for that, and get sales tips, guidance, and advice that will help you accelerate your wins, compete harder, and exit time-wasting opportunities. Talk to you all next week.